Session number 22077, Reel 5.
Morning, Rivali, the charwala used to come round, the tea man, with tea and cakes. You could buy it for a half a piastre, half a rupee, and a half an anna or something like that. Boys didn't use it, but were not able to buy it very often.
I'm going to stop you there.
Yeah.
Harold Morris Metcalf, Reel 5. So you were telling me about the routine of your days there, and you had the charwala came round.
Right. Physical training every morning for an hour, we did actual physical training. You know, if you were a sportsman, sometimes you were taken away to do your training for an hour. At the time, I used to play football, hockey, rugger, for my company before I played for the regiment later on. But that was quite, you know, there were 200 blokes in a company and it was quite a thing, and I was chuffed. So then there was band practice every morning, and that went on till from 9 o'clock to 10:30, couple of whatever you wanted, lemonade that you paid for, and on till midday, lunch 1 till 2, you were free. And then from 2 to 4 o'clock, there was always some sport played or a dog and stick walk out to the country.
Right. What exactly is a dog and stick walk?
Well, it meant that if you had a dog, you took it with you and you had a stick to walk. So they called it a dog and stick. It was just a name. I didn't have a dog at the time because I wasn't able to have one then, but it wasn't long before I had one, and that's another story. I was playing football one day and we were having a slack time, and I turned round to talk to a chap behind me and my knee gave out. Within a second, I had a huge bulge on my right knee and they took me to hospital. It was cartilage trouble. I was only just on my man service, just beginning to do things. I was in a ward with 7 other men, 4 of whom had had cartilage operations and couldn't walk anymore. I'm not being funny. It was the most scarifying time of my life up to then. And I was due to have an operation a week later. And I was in the bed with this whacking great lead thing by each side of me to keep my legs. And the day before the operation, an Indian man came from the Indian Medical Services, student. And they told him what was wrong with me. And he caught hold of my leg just underneath the knee and the top, and he went, and I felt the thing, the elasticity, go back. This, you know, I felt it go back. Within 3 days, I was out of the hospital. I had trouble with it after, but never anything that worried me when I played sport, you know.
Yeah. So you were lucky you didn't have that operation. Yes.
They
weren't very successful.
No, they weren't, none of them. I think 7 chaps had cartilage operations and went home eventually, got the discharges. But I was scared to death at the time because I was only a young man. Anyway, I went back and entered into the normal routine of things. Boxed for the regiment one time in Mao at the Railway Institute and had a good time with him.
What about military training and military exercise?
Well, now, what can I say? Twice a year, we did manoeuvres. That meant you went out somewhere and you learned to do map reading, and only special people did map reading, like the band and drums, the educated people. Don't get me wrong, I'm not being funny, but bandsmen were stretcher bearers. Yes, that was our literal job. Drummers were intelligence men. They were on the intelligence section. When the war came, we were. But that's what we were taught at that time. And every year, we'd have 3 weeks special training of first aid. Every year.
So that first aid was taken very seriously.
Very seriously.
3 weeks is quite
a long
time.
But that happened twice a year sometimes.
What techniques were they teaching you in that?
Primarily, real first aid. Mm. You know, the prime first aid.
Lots of bullets, cuts.
Anything such as, and you know, heart attacks and things like that. You were taught what you ought to do, you know, etc. All bandsmen, the people from the BMH, British Military Hospital, nice chaps. We always had a good time. The sisters were a bit snooty in those days. They were officers, of course. As I say, I was very fortunate over this matter because being in the band and what happened to me kept me going, really.
So you did map reading, did you?
I did... No, I was... First of all, I was in the band.
Yeah.
I did first aiding then. And I didn't do much of that because, first of all, anyone who played sport in my regiment were fed better than most of the men, especially boxing teams. Yes, we got stakes and things when we were training for fights.
So it was taken terribly seriously then, boxing?
All sports in my race. Well, in the army, I mean, yes, they were.
So why was, I mean, boxing is always mentioned. Did you box against other regiments?
Yes.
Yeah, and that was considered very important.
That photograph there,
yes,
was our All India tournament.
Right.
I'll tell you where we went in a minute, but...
That was when you were at Mau, was it?
That's right. Yeah. No, no, no.
No, that was...
No, wait a minute. Where were we then? In Madras.
In Madras.
From Madras. Yeah, that's later on.
Yeah.
Bombay, Parsi barracks and all that. Came back and another thing. Oh, God, that's a long way up. Anyway, in Mau. The Railway Institute, we used to play it there pretty frequently. One day... We were asked to play at the Raja of Indore's palace, Manik Bagh. There was all sorts of problems. We had to go through the divisional commander, but eventually we were granted permission to go.
Where was this?
Indore. Indore, 21 miles from us. And I can remember it very well. I said I was a young man. I went with the band because I was the vocalist. And we arrived there rather early in the day. And one of the chokers said, "You want food? You go cookhouse." So we went food cookhouse. And there was a little dog there, little snappy thing. And he was running about and this Indian butcher, he had this cleaver in his hand, threatening this little dog. And I said, "Oh, he's lovely. Leave him alone." That was that. We went to set up in the hall, Manik Bagh. And whilst we were setting up, the lights were being tested and all these wonderful things, and a lady came down in a white sari. And when this light came behind her, she was diaphanous. You could see her body frame, beautiful. And she was an American, his number one wife. The first time, I think, that any Raja had married a white person. He had about 7 otherwise, you know, but she came down and she talked to us. And my band sergeant said, "Who's going to tell her, you know?" And guess who? Mick. So I said, "Excuse me, ma'am." I said, "When you came down, the light was behind you." And she knew immediately. It was a strong light. And she said, "I hope you were all amused," you know, or words to that effect. And we all had a laugh, and she had a laugh too. And it was quite something. I mean, I'm not joking. It was quite something. And when she came in next time with the boss man, she was dressed in quite a different sari anyway, and the light wasn't on, so it must have been mentioned. We had a wonderful time there.
So what was this? He was having a ball, was he?
He was, yes. There were all sorts of people there, by the way. The governor, you know, of the Punjab and so on. It was quite a posh do,
yes.
A very posh do.
Yeah. So there was
all sorts of people, officers and commissioners and what do we used to call them? There's a name for those other people out there. Anyway, it'll come back to me. But they were all in good authoritative positions.
Yeah.
It was a very nice dance. Yes, quite. Yes.
But it was a Western dance.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Oh, she was quite up to date. She came and asked us to play In the Mood and things like this, you know. She was a very nice woman.
Yeah.
A very nice woman.
Yeah, I can imagine you in the band, you get to see everything, don't you?
Exactly. Especially me, because all I did was sing. I mean, blokes had to play and look at their music. We had a lovely evening. We came back the following morning. We were on band practice. The bandmaster didn't come with us that night for some reason or other. He usedn't often to come, not that bandmaster, till we got a new one. He was a younger man. He used to come, he played violin, and he was all right, Bill Gibbs. But the following morning, we were on band practice when a man came from the order room, and he said, Boy Metcalf, I said, I'm not a boy anymore, I'm a private. I was a bandsman shortly after, but he said, anyway, excuse me, sir, to the bandmaster, there's an Indian out here, he's in a gharry. A gharry was a two-wheeled cart, and he wants Mr. Metcalf. So my bandmaster said, do you know what this is about? And I said, no, sir. Anyway, this bloke came up with a puppy. The puppy, I said, what a lovely little puppy. And the Rani had sent this bloody pup to me to keep. I mean, I couldn't do it. I mean, I wasn't able to do this. But my Corporal Lange, said, don't worry, Metcalf, I'll look after it for you. But it was always my dog. He grew up to be a bull mastiff, Tammy, truly.
What and colour was he?
Brown and white, yeah. Tammy. And I had him. I could tell you wonderful stories about it, but when my wife came up years later, when we were up in the hills, we were out running one morning. She was a VTI and I was training, and suddenly we heard this thump thump, and there he was. He's coming up the road, and he jumped at me, knocked me down. Huge fellow. Anyway, that was Tammy, and my Corporal Long kept him for me till he grew a big dog. He was a very wonderful. He killed an Indian one night, a loose waller. We'd been out one evening to...
What's a loosewaller?
A loosewaller's a thief. They used to come and steal rifles and things like that. Not in our place. All rifles were locked away in racks. But we were not all that far away from the Punjab frontier. But loosewallers were thieves. And they were very slippery. They were. They used to cover themselves with oil when they came in. You couldn't catch the buggers. I'm sorry. Yeah. But that's how it was. And when Stan had the dog for a year or so, we went out one night and we came back, and he used to be chained up with a thick chain. And when we got back, he had legs like this, you know, and he's standing over this Indian who's dead. He bit his buttock so much the bloke bled to death. This is true. But he was a loose waller. He had things in his hand, actually. There was hell to play. Nothing outside the regiment. I mean, it was a wonderful job, you know, maybe cope along with his dog. It was my dog. But that's another story. But that's what happened. And
so did you get much trouble from, you know, thieves? And I mean, there was some unrest, wasn't there, up in the Punjab?
Yeah, we weren't that far up, fortunately. Mm. can I put it this way? It didn't matter where military were, there was always some loose wallers about. They'd come in from the village, for instance, you know. Oh, quite a few were caught. They used to get flogged as well, let me tell you.
Really?
Oh, yes.
What, by the army?
By the army.
Really?
I'm afraid the army, when I was in it, in those days, was a pretty cruel place, believe me.
So would it be an army court? Would they have a hearing?
No. They caught him in a, that was it, you know, straight away, and there was no problem.
Who did the flogging?
And we had very few policemen in our cantonment, because it was a place apart from where I just went to indoor. You know, it was a sort of substation from indoor. Two policemen? Probably won it sometimes, so there was, you couldn't go anywhere then there was trouble, you know. So the regiment literally took, I mean, I better be careful what I'm saying here once, but we were coming back from a march, and the colonel was a man got in front of his horse, an Indian. He literally flogged him with his horse whip. Nothing was said about it, you know. We were the kingpins in those days. That I'm not being funny, but no. That was it. That's how it was.
So who did a flogging? Who actually performed the flogging?
Usually the sergeant, the provost sergeant. He was the man who was the incumbent. If boys got punished, they got punished by their corporal. Sometimes you had to go and watch, and sometimes you didn't. The drum major was always there anyway to see that things were done. I only saw one boy, Len, Skipper Price.
Yeah.
in Singapore. Right. Mao, it was a lovely little station. I got friendly with some people in the Railway Institute.
And they were engineers, were they? Train drivers.
Her husband was a train driver. Her mother was a charming woman. I've forgotten her names at the moment.
Anglo-Indian folk.
Most Anglo-Indians. Right. There were only three English blokes there on that railway. That nearly all Anglo-Indian people.
What did British people feel about the Anglo-Indians?
We got on very well with them.
Right.
It was Indian people who didn't get on very well with Anglo in the main. Mm. I could tell you a lot about that sort of thing later on, but at the club, they were all Anglo-Indian girls. Quite a lot of our blokes knocked them off. I was fortunate. I had an English girl, my girl, you know, but I never went dancing with Yvonne.
Because a lot of the Anglo-Indian women were very beautiful, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, my word. Some of them were very lovely.
Yeah.
Very lovely. I better be careful what I'm saying now. But I'm not being funny about this, but because I was a band vocalist, I used to get off with the girls. They used to send me little notes. Dear smiling boy, can you sing? You know, my wife would tell you if she was here, because when we got married, we found a lot of things that I ought not to have done. But the thing is this, that I got on well. Then they found out, they asked me, most of them were Catholics, by the way. And one lady, my friend, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, I've forgotten the mother's name, Hilton, Mrs. Hilton, the dance band name, Hilton, Jack Hilton, Mrs. Hilton, she said, Mick, would it be possible for you to sing the Messiah for us? And I said, where is this? She said, well, our church has to go and practice. And then we will all go to indoor to do it at the cathedral. I said, well, I can't say yes, because in those days you had to have the colonel's permission to do anything from getting married downwards. Told my bandmaster, he said, are you interested? I said, yes. I didn't know Messiah very well at the time. And I said, yes. He said, all right, I'll see the colonel. I got permission. All on the program. By kind permission of Lieutenant Colonel Chapman, I was allowed to sing. Well, I'm not joking. I went by train, paid for by the Catholic Church. And I got to this place. I was wearing my number one uniform, blue patrols, as we called them. And I was met at the station, and I went to this house. It was for the elevation of someone to prefect apostolic, that was what it was called. I knew very little about this. I was a nonconformist. I met two padres. One was Belgian and one was German. And we had a little chat in very halting English. And that was that. In the evening, I was called forward and we had one practice. That was all. I didn't sing my solos. They sang. They were expecting me to do it right. Well, every valley and every valley and mountain should be exalted. I had a wonderful evening. I came away and one of these Belgian chaplains came up to me and he said, I am sorry, it was wonderful. But I thought you were the commissionaire when I came, because I was in ruddy blue uniform. We went to a banquet afterwards and I was most upset. I really was. All the stuff had been sent from Bombay, refrigerated, ice creams and champagne. I'm not joking. The Catholic Church out there, I mean, I don't want to be rude, but they really...
They lived well, didn't they?
And I was upset because just down the road there was poor Indians starving, you know, and I really was. I was very religious type of man. I still am, but much more when I was younger.
It can't have felt right, can it?
Not at all. I didn't think it was right. The only thing that was right, they gave me two crates of beer to take back to my chaps, and I was taken back by car.
That was... How did you cope with the poverty? I mean, there was a lot of poverty around you, although you were provided for, you had your own food and laundry done, and you know, and there were people presumably living in the dust.
Can I put it this way? We tried to black ourselves off from it, I think, really. There was an awful lot of, I mean, you could find people dying on the side of the road, truly. I can't believe it now, but we've often seen them, you know. I mean, it's quite a different place now since we went back, but the fact is that's how it was, especially in the out in the Mofussil, as we called it, outside the city, in all these small village places.
I suppose it was normal, or you soon accepted it as normal.
That's right, yeah. It was. Mm. I mean, they were poor then, they're poor now, by the way. Mm. It's terrible in some of the places out there. Mm. But in the big cities, it was quite a different kettle of fish. You had hundreds of beggars, dirty, covered in sores, many of them, but that was it. It was life. That was the way it was in those days. And we were an imperial, you know, we were the bosses, and it's true as well. And Mao, I loved Mao. It was a lovely little station. And then...
How long were you there?
Nearly 3 years.
Oh, right, quite a time.
Mm. And I had a good time. We played at other places beside the other, you know, the RA used to ask our band to go and play at their dances too. So we got quite a few engagements.
The Gloucesters were the only people at Mao.
That's right, yes. Yeah. No, we had two regiments of artillery, but not in our barracks, you understand me?
Okay.
X battery, Y battery, but they were quite a large artillery mob, so they had their own messes and we played at their messes because they didn't have a band, you see, because the artillery only had their big band on. And the one other thing I was going to think about Mao, we used to go to a place called Patal Pawnee, a waterfall, on a Thursday after we'd bugged out. We used to go there, most of the band blokes. Patal Pawnee. Pawnee is water, but what Patal meant, it must have been the name of the water, Patal Water. Lovely waterfall, and the water was beautiful. And we'd come back from there burnt, really burnt. And John Veal always was a daft ass. He put olive oil on himself one day, and he came back with blisters like this. And he got into trouble, because if you couldn't wear your equipment, you were in trouble with sunburn. John got into trouble over that. But he became an officer later on, John. That's another story. John DeVoe. And we went to Patal Pawnee one day, and he, of course, there were some baboons used to come down, never bothered us. He threw a stone at them one day. That was it. We had to run home in our swimming costumes. All our stuff was left. They chased us a long way. They didn't catch us, fortunately. But that night, they came to the barracks and they tore up all the bedding. Monkeys.
Yeah.
There was hell to play about it. The colonel, Mad Chapman, like he was, took his gun and got some others, went out shooting, you know what I mean? Truly. Oh God, it was awful. We didn't go to Patal Pawnee after that for a while, but it was the one place it was nice to go to, you know, where the water was clean and so on. And we had a swimming bath. Wasn't very bright and it wasn't clean very often, but it was there to be used.
What was the food like? Were you eating not
wonderful.
Fish,
no, it was issue, but we had rations every day. Quite respectable. Except the porridge in the morning always had weevils in it. Always. It was no good trying to pick them out because there were so many of them. So we just took it as a natural course of some kind of good food. Fortunately, as I said, my chum John and I were able to buy a little pot of cream every morning, and that tempered our porridge. But otherwise, we had reasonable meals.
Yeah.
Good, our cooks were quite good. Our chili cream, yes,
yeah.
quite always a regular. We didn't get much eggs and bacon at that time, but we got good food and quite a lot of fish actually. And lunchtime, well, you got beef, pork. Sausages at breakfast time sometimes. Very little for tea. You got tea and a cake. In the morning we had char and wad. That was, first of all, we had to pay for it. Then they decided that they'd have an issue. So you put your Dixie out at night. In the morning they came from the cookhouse, filled it up with tea, and you used to go out and get your own.
Yeah.
You know. That happened all the time we were at Mao. And then we were told we were going to Multan.
Yeah.
Molchan is on the frontier. And we were not really looking forward to it because it was a very dangerous place to be in those days. But on the contrary, it was to be a 6 months tour and we would have got the Indian General Service Medal. So everybody was looking forward to going, yes? Anyway, that was going on and on. And
how do you spell Multan?
Multan.
Thank you. Yeah. So you were...
All the
you
boxes?
Were trained as a soldier, were you?
Yes.
So you went as a soldier, not as
yes.
a fanciman. Yeah, right.
No, no. You were a soldier first and foremost.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Bandsman was a secondary consideration. We all knew... I was a crack shot, by the way. I was a marksman. I used to wear my sword. My gun was on my sleeve.
Right.
I loved shooting. I still have a rifle upstairs now.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell anybody. It's an air rifle, big one. But I loved shooting. So did my adopted brother, Frank. And he was a crack shot in the regiment. But we did... quite regular range practice.
What weapons were you using?
303 rifles in those days. We had nothing else. We had a machine gun company and we had a Lewis gun section. We're in the drums, by the way. Four Lewis guns, that's all we had at that time. A company was the machine gun company. They were trained in machine gunning. But rifle shooting was done throughout the regiment. And every year you had a shoot. That was when you had to fire for your pay. You got extra pay if you were marksman 6 months a day, which was a lot of money then. And I was a marksman my first year, and I was a marksman the whole time I was in, so I did all right. And then I was made a lance corporal. That gave me another tanner a day. But we were really looking forward in the end to going to Multan. And then suddenly, midnight one night, the alarm sounded. Get your belts and bayonets on, ta-da-da-da-da-da-da. And we all turned out, and the colonel's there. And he said, gentlemen, I don't like to tell you this, but all your boxes will have to be renumbered. We are not going to Multan, we are going to Madras. We knew nothing about it. We had 2 days. Had to redo all the kit. All the boxes had been marked. You can't believe this, honestly. The King's Liverpool Regiment that had mucked up Singapore had got into trouble again. They'd been in an Indian village and raped a lot of women. So they were sent to Multan as a punishment station, if you please. So you can understand it was a punishment station, but no one was due to go. So we had to go. So we didn't go to Multan. So we didn't get our Indian General Service Medal. Boo-hoo. We went to a place called Madras.
Right. And when did you go there? It should be, 3 years after?
Would it be
35,
was it, or 36? It was 35 or 36. I can't really remember the time. I can't remember. It must have been probably 36.
Right.
I'll tell you why it was 36, because I was due to come on leave to England, but I couldn't come because King George V was having his jubilee, and the troop ships had to be, so I wasn't coming home till 37, that's right. So we got to Madras, and we marched from the station to the barracks at Madras. It'll come back to me in a minute. It was Clive's residence was there. That was where he was. Fort St. George, Madras.
So what sort of a city was Madras?
Wonderful.
Yeah.
This is the first time we've been to a big Indian city. We didn't know much about it for a while, of course, but it was a very good city, actually. The marina at Madras was the most wonderful place I've ever seen. And the beach, Bondi had nothing on Madras Beach, really. However, we got there late in the day, and the first thing we saw were the punkas. They were electric driven, and at night time they came down over your bed, so you had it right over you, the flow. But I must say this, first of all, we were really tired, and when we went to bed that night, woke up in the morning, I couldn't open my eyes, and I was going like this, and eventually I got them opened, and the blokes were all saying, what the bloody hell's the matter? none of us could open their eyes. We were so near the sea, it was only the marina between us and the sea, the barracks were right on the edge, and with the punkers and the salt air coming in from the sea, every night this happened, used to get coated with salt. That's all it was, but it was quite frightening the first night. We all got used to it, but it really was a funny business.
Yeah, well, I'll stop you there.
Yeah.
Harold Morris Metcalf, end of reel 5.